True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
We are officially 1 month away from opening day. That is so surreal. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank Stample here with the entire crew. Adam Azer, Scott White, Chris Towers. Guys, we are officially a month away. This is crazy. It all came together so quickly.
Hashtag whole squad is here. Yeah, it's weird. I just had a meeting. Adam was in it where we were talking about our plans for the football preseason. And it was like, all right, so training camp opens on, I think the first team reports on July 25th, which is opening day of Major League Baseball. That is weird.
Oh my God. It's going to be such a hectic couple of months, but I guess it makes for fun. It makes for fun podcasts as well. And this is why you need to be watching our Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel, because I've got the fresh cut. Chris has got the fresh cut. Scott's got the swaggy comb over. And then Adam's here.
Adam looks like trash.
I do look terrible. I look terrible. Oh, my gosh.
Shout out to Phase 2 in New York City. Barbershops are now open.
Not happening for me, but yeah, I will cut my hair. My wife and I will combine to cut my hair very soon. I have a couple things I'd like to mention, Frank, if I could have the floor.
Go ahead. One, it's all yours.
I'm having trouble getting excited. I was having trouble getting excited about baseball, but I was thinking about it last night, and my God, the Yankees are so good. They are incredible. Now I'm ready for baseball. They have a little bit of weakness at the back end of their rotation, but they are amazing. This could be one of the best Yankees teams ever. They're just so good. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I am the commissioner of a 14 team league that is drafting right now. We've been drafting for months.
We haven't finished yet.
You just drafted a couple picks ago.
Okay. That was a week and a half ago.
You drafted a week and a half ago. Will made a pick today because I reminded him he was on the clock.
Sounds like a fun league.
So, you know, someone accused me of taking as long as Will Brinson to draft, and I added up the time between picks, and his was like double mine. So
he's awful. He's probably up to almost a month of just his picks. I'm not even kidding, because he's gone weeks at a time. But anyway, Will and one other CBS, or it's an office league, Tom Fornelli, have brought up that they want to redraft. And I don't know if Tom was being serious, but Will was being serious. He's like, so we have to redraft now, right? I'm like, no. And then he said, 60 games is vastly different than 162 games. Will you change your tune if your first round pick opts out of playing for safety reasons? And then I said, if a number of players drop out, then it's a discussion worth having. As of right now, I can't see how a draft would be much different than it was a few months ago. Like, come on, we're not redoing the draft. We got enough going on. We don't have much time to cram in our drafts to begin with. We're not redoing it.
I
believe that. What's so different now than a few months ago when we knew the season was going to be delayed at least a little bit?
Just everything.
The strategic reasons for redoing drafts, I think, are less compelling than the simple fact that the draft is the best part of playing fantasy sports. And you get
an
opportunity.
And that's why you want the
draft
results to stand, because you put in the legwork.
I completely disagree.
And you put in the heart and the energy, and you like, if it can just be erased that easily, then the draft loses a lot of its luster.
Well, I mean, like, if we set, you know, slippery slope arguments, I don't have time for. All right. If we set the standard that if there is the worst pandemic in a century that shuts down society for several months and causes baseball to be delayed by 4 months, then you can redo the draft. That is the standard we will set. And it seems like a pretty high one that we're not going to have to like worry about again. It's not like well, if we can just throw out these results for this, it's like, no, we can throw out
results
just for this.
But we knew the season was going to be late. We didn't know what would end up happening. And we just said, okay, we're going to keep drafting. And there's no difference in that. Now, if a bunch of players start opting out, then okay, we'll reconsider. But that hasn't happened so far.
For me, it's slow drafts aren't as fun as live drafts. And so I don't mind it for that league. But if you are playing in your home, I couldn't believe the results of that poll. What did they end up being on that poll, Frank? It was like 55-45 last time I saw, asking if people should redraft.
Yeah, so I tweeted this poll last night. Did not think it was going to be as controversial as it wound up being, but 53% vote yes that if you drafted back in March for a 162-game season, you should be allowed to redraft, and 46.9% voted no. So close to 50-50. It seems like we're 50-50 split on this show. I agree with Chris. I think if you drafted early March or even late February for a 162-game season and you didn't know all of this was going to happen at the time, then you should be allowed to redraft. I mean, you essentially drafted for a completely different league in a completely different galaxy that will
it
not
really
exist.
It really wasn't
this
completely different.
Yeah,
did there are some small differences.
Oh,
it's not
Adam,
like it's not like we're playing with replacement players now. It's not like the league is taking place in Arizona in Cactus League venues. Like, I could understand more in that scenario. Some players, you have to tweak their ranking a little bit, a spot or two. And maybe like Rich Hill, you move up 40 spots. But, you know, it's not a completely different league.
Yeah, and not to mention with this slow draft, we've known for weeks that Rich Hill should have been moved up. In fact, I think I drafted Rich Hill. So I don't buy it at all. I don't buy it.
I will say your poll too. Like, obviously, you know, most people were just clicking yes or no. It got thousands of votes or whatever. But the actual comments of people explaining their vote, like on both sides, they were adamant. It wasn't like, I'd rather not do it again. It just seems impractical. Like, nobody just took a casual approach to it. Like, why would anybody think of redrafting, or why would anybody think of not redrafting?
Yeah, for me.
And like, if it's that divisive, I feel like you have to err on the side of not drafting. You can't take away somebody's team that they worked so hard for. If your whole league wants to redraft, fine. I don't care. It's your league. Have a ball. But like, if it's that divided, like I would be afraid of just making it a majority vote thing. Like it would have to be pretty much unanimous that people want to redraft.
I agree with that point. I think if everyone in your league votes for a redraft, then it should go through. But if anyone is, you know, against it, which there are going to be some people, because whoever got Verlander at a discount or Clevinger at a discount because of injury, of course they're not going to want to redraft, especially if there's money on the line. So I do agree it has to be a unanimous vote, but that's just personally how I feel. Today on the show, we're going to do basically a bunch of this. We're going to talk about what you should expect for the season. Sorry I lied yesterday. Position previews are not starting today. They will start either tomorrow or Friday. But we will address everything that came out last night, from rules, rosters, scheduling, how you should play head-to-head in Roto, because a lot of people still have questions regarding this. And speaking of questions, we will answer those. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. Also grabbed a few of our Facebook group questions as well. Email of the day, speaking of which, from Trenton. Dear Tim, David, Avery, Mario, and Sean. That's five people. We only have four here on the show. Does anyone know who those guys are?
They sound like San Antonio
Spurs
from the 90s.
Yeah. Mm. Well, actually, I shouldn't be saying it like that, because the 1999 Spurs, they beat the Knicks, of course. You know, Adam and myself. Painful memories, but everything with Knicks is a painful memory.
Is that just the starting lineup from that team?
Yeah.
Mario Manningham, is that who that is?
Mario.
No, that was a giant.
Mario
sorry.
Mario Ellie and Sean Elliott.
Mario Manningham.
Mario Manningham
was
a good memory for me.
Yeah.
With Mike Trout and his wife expecting a baby, it's a decent possibility he misses a little or a lot of time. There is a possibility he doesn't even play at all. I would not feel comfortable taking him in the first round. Where do you all see him dropping to? I believe Garrett Cole is also in the same position. I would probably drop both to round 3 or 4, considering the length of the upcoming season. Missing 2 to 3 weeks would be disastrous. And I researched this before the show. Garrett Cole's baby is due in June, but I have not seen anything regarding that the baby has been born yet. So that should happen in the next week or so, hopefully. But Mike Trout is a little bit different because his baby is due in August. Fellas, what happens here?
So the question I have, I guess, is it was initially reported that players with high-risk family members could opt out and still get service time and pay.
Yeah, correct. That was what Bob Nightingale reported last night. However,
it does not seem to be true.
Right. Ken Rosenthal corrected that. Players who are considered high-risk themselves can opt to sit out without pay, and there's a panel of doctors and whatever else who can, you know, if it's at all undecided whether they're high risk or not, there's a panel to determine that. But players who have high risk people living in their homes or pregnant spouses, they can opt to sit out, but they can't opt to sit out and still get full pay. Now, Ken Rosenthal pointed out, teams might choose on their own to make special exceptions for players. That's a possibility, but that, you know, the official stance is that they would not get paid for that. Paternity leave is still in effect, the 3-day paternity leave. And Ken Rosenthal also pointed out that teams might be willing to extend it 7 days, so for a total of 10 days under the family emergency provision.
Yeah, I mean,
but a player would have to want to do, like, I obviously don't know Mike Trout personally, but I would be surprised if, you know, presuming the baby is born healthy and everybody's okay, I would be surprised if he took longer than the 3-day parental leave, which, you know, is 3 days in a 60-game season is still a lot more than in a 162-game season, but not enough that you should be dropping him significantly in your rankings. So I think it's a little too much concern.
So are you dropping him at all, Scott? Because I believe both you and I have him number one overall in head-to-head points leagues.
I mean, the only one I would consider dropping him behind in, I already have him behind Acuna in a Roto League. The only other one I could consider dropping him behind is Yelich in both formats. And I'm not inclined to do that as of now. I'm hoping we'll get word sooner than later if certain players are choosing to opt out. And, you know, who knows? Yelich may have something going on that makes him opt out. So it's kind of difficult to make that determination right now. But provided Yelich is fine,
I don't see that.
I don't think
guys.
I would.
He's talking about dropping them down to round 3 or 4. I mean,
yeah.
That's...
I mean, no, we're not even...
I think, well, I talked to him. I emailed Trenton, who sent
Oh, I thought you meant Mike Trout.
Yeah, no.
That would be cool.
He specifically mentioned the language in the agreement between MLBPA and MLB about being allowed to miss time due to residing with a spouse who is high risk. And you guys just said that that's not true. So, you know, Trent, so that should clarify things for the guy who wrote the email, Trenton, who, by the way, is a service member. So thank you for your service. He's not going to miss 10 days in a 60-game season. I'd be shocked. Do I know? No. But yeah. The way I have to draft is I'm thinking that's just not going to happen. And also, as someone whose wife just gave birth during the pandemic, I don't know how high risk it is. I mean, we played it extremely cautiously, and we were told that it's just like flu season where a pregnant woman, her immunity is lower. But all the studies have not shown the babies having issues, the ones who have COVID, you know, all that stuff. It doesn't seem like that's the category that's really high risk. So we didn't approach it that way. We approached it like, let's just pretend we are high risk. But in reality, I feel like everything would have been fine even if we did get the virus. But I don't think this is an issue personally, and I will not be drafting as if it is an issue. Now, if the other is just like, he's just going to take 10 days off for paternity leave, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's going to happen.
You can't draft as if it will happen if we don't know. Like, if he says something about it, then you can act. But it just, it's too much of an unknown. There's too many other ways that, you know, a player can miss time. Like, I'm starting to get actually pretty nervous about, like, how many players are going to have to miss time because they're not I don't know, man. I don't want to say they're not taking it seriously, but we're already having players coming down with illnesses, and we're already having team staff coming down with illnesses, and that's not a good sign when they're not even, like, we're not even at the point where there are 50 people in each team facility every day having to coexist like there will be in a week or 10 days. So look, players are going to miss time with this. It's just an inevitability. Hopefully it won't be a situation where it, you know, shuts things down, but we're just going to have to deal with that. And it's another thing where we just don't know, right, you know, who it will be. Hopefully, you know, it all ends up being relatively minor and everybody gets through it. Okay. But this is going to be an ongoing issue throughout the season. And I don't know if, like, Mike Trout's wife being expected to give birth in August is the kind of thing you should really factor in.
Please push your drafts as far back, as close to July 24th as you possibly can. If you draft Wednesday, July 22nd, the weekend before, I mean, even that's probably, I mean, seriously, draft as close to opening day as you possibly can. News and notes. We've already talked a lot about COVID. MLB will have a COVID-19 specific inactive list that players will be placed on if and when they test positive or show symptoms. Chris, you've already alluded to this. Players and staff members are already testing positive. Yesterday, we found out that 3 Rockies players had tested positive, one of which is Charlie Blackmon. So, sorry, Adam. I know you're a big Charlie Blackmon fan. Just kidding. I mean, he should be perfectly fine. But this is a weird question, and I don't want it to come off as insensitive. But if a player is going to get it at some point, wouldn't you rather them get it now than in season?
Yes, and I'll take the awkwardness away because we had to talk about this on the football podcast with Ezekiel Elliott, and it was awkward to bring up.
Yep.
As of now, I have not seen evidence that you can get it twice, right? People were like, well, you probably can't get it twice. They don't know one way or the other, but it seems like you can't get it twice so far.
What is the point of asking this question? Are we just saying,
because Charlie Blackmon has COVID, so that means he's probably not going to get it again?
Is the question, should we downgrade him because he has
we should
COVID?
Upgrade him upgrade because him. He's not going to get
upgrade
it
him
the
because
it's
he
not,
won't get it again.
Yes, that's exactly right.
It's not that simple though.
It is that simple.
It's not that simple because it's not just like, we don't know how his body is going to react. You know, most people who are young and relatively healthy, you know, have relatively minor symptoms from what we understand. However, there are, we have seen evidence of potential long-term effects beyond just the illness and beyond, like, it impacts your, you know, shortness of breath is one of the key factors. And, you know, obviously I don't have experience with this specific disease and I'm not a doctor, but I've definitely had, like, respiratory infections that even once I was healthy, it still lingered. And so I don't, like, we can't, this is another thing that we just can't know. We're not qualified to know, but I don't want to just say across the board, it would be a, like, beyond just, like, the awkwardness of it. Like, we just don't know what the impact of that is going to be. It's going to be different for everyone.
You're right. And I'm not going to say that across the board. It's a good, I don't think anybody should get COVID just so they don't get it during the season. I don't think baseball players should be like, well, give it to me now. But he did get it. If he's fine, and we know that he's probably not going to get it again based on what Dr. Fauci has said, I do think that's fantasy relevant. I do think that's fantasy significant.
To the extent you move him up, though, like that,
I don't know if you move him up.
Seems to be assuming every other player is going to get it at some point, which, you know.
If I had assurances.
Fewer of them will get it than won't.
I don't want to. It's a sensitive subject. I'll just. Yeah. You know what? I said my piece. I'll leave it at that. I think that a lot of players are going to get it. And if. if you absolutely knew for a fact that someone couldn't get it twice, then this would be, in my opinion, a big deal. But, you know, health and safety is first and foremost here, and hopefully everybody's okay. And odds are Charlie Blackmon is going to be just fine and won't have the symptoms won't be that bad.
And I do want to point out, like, this is uncharted territory for all of us, and we may have some awkward or uncomfortable discussions while talking about it. You know, let's allow each other, let's allow ourselves the grace to talk about this. You know, it's a weird subject that we're trying to take on in real time. We don't exactly know what the results of this are going to be. To a certain extent, the sports world is having an experiment right now, as weird as that is to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Levi, thank you, Chris. I appreciate you saying that. And I just want to say, if anybody's sitting there thinking that I'm not taking this virus seriously, that couldn't be further from the truth.
Adam hasn't left his house in four
I really
months.
Barely have.
But that's
I'm
pretty normal,
cautious.
Though.
I'm doing my part for the community. And so I think everybody should do that as much as they can. But we do have baseball to talk about.
Levi Weaver of The Athletic notes that Kyle Gibson has ulcerative colitis and is not required to participate in MLB's planned 60-game season. And this is kind of what we were talking about, where if you have underlying conditions, you can opt out potentially. And it just makes me wonder if, you know, the same thing is going to happen for Carlos Carrasco, who is recovered from leukemia, or people who have previously recovered from cancer, you know? Like, yeah. John
David,
Lester
David
or Dahl's Anthony.
One I've seen before because he had a splenectomy, and spleen is important for fighting off infections. So, you know, if they're getting paid anyway, the easy answer would be just to stay home. So it's going to kind of, I don't think they'll all stay home. I think genuinely most of these guys want to play baseball. So I suspect more of them will play or not. I don't think they should be judged either way. I definitely don't think they should be judged if they choose to not play. And like, nobody should be bullied into playing. Like, that's obviously not something I want to see, or anybody wants to see, anybody should want to see. But I suspect until we hear otherwise, I'm operating under the presumption that these guys will play, because I think most of them will.
There have already been a few basketball players who have opted out. Avery Bradley for the Lakers.
Davis Bertans.
Yeah, and
Trevor
Ariza. Player.
Trevor Ariza.
Trevor Ariza. And so, like, we're going to see, it's inevitable. We're going to see, there's 700 players on an MLB roster or something like that. Yeah, 750 on an active roster. We're going to see guys opt out. And it's just, Right now, it's, we can't really speculate on who will, like, or won't, because it's ultimately an entirely personal decision for each player to make.
And we have a handful of examples we could say, well, this might be a reason this guy would sit out, but like, we don't have anybody's entire medical history. Like,
right.
We don't know who all's diabetic. I'm sure lots of players are.
We'll know before long.
Yeah.
That's why push your draft back as close to the opening day as you possibly can. Players are free to sign as of Friday at noon Eastern time. According to Jim Bowden, who is a contributor for CBS Sports HQ, the Giants are still interested in Yasiel Puig. Yasiel Puig was a top 30 outfielder in both formats last season. A very polarizing player. Obviously, the Giants would not be a great venue to play in, but in terms of playing time, I would suspect he would play every day and potentially be moved at the trade deadline, which we found out will be August 31st. So
yeah, Giants would be just about a worst case scenario for Yasiel Puig, but
would it though?
Well,
he would definitely have a spot.
Right,
to play.
That's so. The worst case scenario is we don't get to watch Yasiel Puig play baseball in 2020, which would just be
exactly
a problem for everyone. I guess some people would like it, but we don't have to listen to those people. Like, we want Yasiel Puig in a major league uniform. We want him in an everyday lineup. The Giants would give him an opportunity to do both of those. So in that sense, that's good. In the other sense, there aren't many offensive environments that are worse. In the other sense, though, I guess he would be playing more of his games at Coors Field relative to the total schedule by playing in Giant at with the Giants. So that would be a good thing. You know, it's going from, we still don't actually know what the schedule breakdown is beyond the 40-20, right? 40 games in division, 20 against your.
Yeah. And we'll get to that a little bit later on, but
yeah, 40 in division, 20 in the opposing division, you know, the sister division in the opposite league. And the breakdown would be 6 games against the natural rival and then
natural rival,
three or two against the other 4 teams.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a bad break for the Mets because they have to face the Yankees 6 times because of the natural rival rule, and the Nationals get to face the Orioles 6 times.
I don't even like, who's the Red Sox natural rival?
I don't. We're about to find out, I guess.
I think it's the Braves, I think.
That makes sense.
They both wear blue and red. They're rivals. Like,
they should have just scrapped interleague play for this year. I know it would have created unbalanced schedules, but the schedules are going to be unbalanced anyway. And like, I think we could live with one 60 game season of unbalanced schedules.
Well, it would mean 2 teams would have to be off every night if they scrapped interleague play.
I guess that's fair.
Let's quickly hit these final 2 news items. Michael Fulmer announces that he is ready for the season. The last time we saw him was in 2018. He had a 4.69 ERA and a 1.31 whip. Scott, quickly, any interest?
Yeah, I mean, not in terms of drafting him, but I mean, I think he could be a Marcus Stroman type if he bounces back strong from this. So somebody to keep an eye on early in the season if he's going well and you need an extra arm. He was fantasy relevant before he got hurt. Maybe not right before he got hurt, but he was somebody people cared about in fantasy.
I was a huge, huge Michael Fulmer fan. An apologist, if you will. Domingo Herman has 63 games left on his suspension, so he will not pitch at all this season. And Michael Pineda, speaking of suspensions, still has 39 games left on his. So doesn't really leave much time for him to have a lot of value for fantasy this year. Let's take a quick break. We'll take an early break today. When we come back, we will look at the schedule, divisions, rosters, how that's going to break down, the 60-player pool, apparently, what the taxi squads are going to look like, and then get into how we're handling head-to-head points, roto, head-to-head categories, leagues. We'll do all that here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Alrighty, we're back here on Fantasy Baseball Today. I thought we got all the news and notes out of the way, but Chris, you found another news item while we were in a quick break.
Yeah, it looks like Joe Maddon's talking to reporters right now, and there have been a couple of noteworthy news items. He's got no indication that any Angels are considering opting out so far. Obviously, that doesn't mean they won't be. He also was quoted, asked whether they would consider using Ohtani differently in this shortened season, which from what I gather is asking whether he would hit on days that he pitches. I don't think it'll happen right now, but it is something I would love to see happen at some point. So that probably means Ohtani pitching once a week and DH in between with the day off before and after he starts. So you figure 10 weeks, 60 games, right? Average of six games per week with a couple of 7-game weeks. You're probably looking at a start every week, no 2 start weeks, maybe 1. and then four starts as a hitter.
Yeah. So we're that's basically back starts. Where we were in 2018. That's what he was doing then. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So 9 to 10 starts as a starter. And even more so than most pitchers, I would expect he will be treated with very short leash early on, given that he will not have any game action since having Tommy John surgery as a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you play in a league where you have to choose between a pitcher or a hitter version of Ohtani, I think the pitcher version, I won't say he's undraftable, but
he's not undraftable.
I would be shocked if you got 50 innings out of him this season.
Those last four or five starts though should be pretty.
Yeah. But
he should be good for a solid workload by
that point. But I would be shocked if you got 50 innings from. Well, I would be shocked if you got 55. I would be surprised if you got 50. And so, given that most starters you're hoping for 70 to 80,
right? It might be a situation where you draft him and just stash him for. Yeah. I mean, until he shows he's going to go 5+ with consistency.
But like, I would definitely rather have Rich Hill than Shohei Ohtani.
Is he sort of a glorified middle reliever in a roto league?
Maybe, but like he'll get more innings than your relievers, obviously, but there's no guarantee they're going to be good. I mean, he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. He may be just fine. Last time we saw him, he was a really good pitcher, but there's also a chance that it takes him a little while to get going. And
maybe,
you know, we saw that with Denelson Lamet last year where, you know, he's the first guy who came to mind, but he wasn't particularly good immediately upon coming back. It took him a little while, and the whole season is a little while right now.
But in theory though, if he comes back and he pitches like Ohtani just in shorter spurts, he's going to give you probably a higher ERA and a higher WHIP than the middle reliever you'd be using, but it'd still be good compared to other starting pitchers, and the strikeouts will be better than the middle reliever, I would think. I think he's still useful in roto.
I don't think I would take him as a top 60 starter.
Scheduling in divisions. We've already talked about this a little bit, but basically for this season, you're going to face your in-division opponent 10 times. So times four division opponents, that amounts to 40 games. So basically 66% of the games that a team plays this year are going to come against their division opponents. Normally it's you face your division opponent 19 times. 19 times
47%, four. Just a little under half.
Yeah, so I mean, playing in your division counts much more and is much more importance than it usually is. And that's basically what we've been saying all along. And each club will play a total of 20 games against a corresponding interleague division. The AL East will versus the NL East. And six of those games will come against the interleague rival, Yankees versus Mets, Cubs versus White Sox. And again, I mentioned this, but Nationals versus Orioles, you know, the natural rivalry that is.
This just like it seems like a dumb way to have done the schedule, right? Like it should have been 42 games against your division, which comes out to 13 per opponent, I believe. No, I don't know what it comes out to. You'd have had to play two teams twice, once extra time, which whatever, who cares? And then you could have played six against your natural rival and then three each against every other division.
That would make sense. The league.
This is they should have just gotten
I'm
rid of,
fine with it.
They should have gotten rid of interleague play. Like it's just that's you're adding extra travel. You're adding three or four extra cities that every team needs to travel to. Like it's just
that was the problem with the Astros moving to the AL is you made two odd number leagues instead of two even number leagues. So it meant interleague play was here to stay, and that includes during a pandemic.
But it's not really extra travel. It's just going.
Yes,
to
it
different,
is.
It's just going to different cities. But you still have to travel to cities.
Right, but you're still going from. But like, there are still certain cities that have more or fewer outbreaks at a given time. There are certain cities that are worse, riskier to be in, and so, you know, right now, like every AL East team, which are mostly in places that are not currently experiencing hotspots, except for Tampa, have to travel to Miami and Georgia or Atlanta, which is currently having, I think that's like the fourth highest birth rate.
But how about the Phillies? The Phillies now have to take fewer trips to Georgia and to South Florida, and instead they get to go to New York.
No, they don't. Well, not
and
really.
Toronto.
Actually, it doesn't sound like Toronto is going to be an option, right?
I think the Braves' natural rival might be Toronto. I think maybe Philly and Red Sox are linked. It used
Philly
to
and
be,
the Phillies and the Red Sox are linked. Yeah,
it used to be the Red Sox and the Braves were linked, but then
it made more sense.
Then that's when the Expos were still around.
I've got no beef with the schedule, Frank.
It doesn't really change anything for fantasy, right? Because this is kind of what we suspected it was going to be all along anyway.
Yeah, the primary thing is how much you're playing your own division and the parks that are there. But even then, it's all relatively small.
You guys mentioned travel, and I saw, you know, on The Athletic, per Jason Stark's article, the easiest travel is for the 10 NL East and AL East teams. They will never leave their time zone. And the hardest travel is for the 10 NL West and AL West clubs, who will be forced to cover three different time zones, West, Mountain, and Central, throughout the course of the season. Does this change anything at all?
No. Like, these are all marginal things that we can't quantify. Like, we know in the NFL that a team traveling east and playing a 1 o'clock game from the West Coast tends to struggle a little more, but baseball, like you're still, you have more time to get used to it. I don't think it just does highlight just how like the Western divisions in baseball are just kind of that's West. They're just over there. That's the whole West. Everything from Texas on, that's the West. It's kind of silly.
Scott, from your article that is live on CBSSports.com, you pointed out that MLB can relocate teams for health and safety reasons as needed, and this still might happen for the Toronto Blue Jays. So, you know, once we figure that out, whether it's going to be in their spring training complex or somewhere completely different, you do have to take that into account because normally Rogers Center is a hitter's venue.
Mm-hmm. If it is in is it Dunedin, Florida? Dunedin, Florida. Yeah. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Yeah, and you wrote about this earlier too, a couple of months ago, about how it would help Kevin Vigio.
So if it is, it's still a hitter's park. It's especially good for left-handed hitters. That right center field fence is like 350 feet away. So, I don't want to get too deep into it because we don't exactly know if that's where they're playing or if they're even going to be, or how long they'd be playing there, but. I don't think it would drastically change the Blue Jays' value.
I believe it is pronounced Dunedin because the name comes from the Scottish Gaelic name for Edinburgh, Dune Aiden. What? So there you go.
Edinburgh?
That's how you just said?
I don't know. How would I know? The strength of schedule, I saw this on Twitter last night based on 2019 records per Jeremy Frank at MLB Random Stats on Twitter. Sorry, Chris, but the Miami Marlins have the toughest schedule this year based on 2019.
They don't get to play the Marlins.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. The Mariners have a tough schedule. The Angels, the Orioles, of course, I mean, a lot of these teams are, you know, not great teams, so that makes sense. They don't get to face themselves. But I thought it was interesting that, as we've said all along, you know, I am targeting Minnesota Twins starting pitchers. They have the easiest strength of schedule in the entire league. Based on last year's win-loss record, the Indians are second. The White Sox are third. The Yankees are tied for fourth in baseball with the Cardinals in terms of the easiest schedule of the season. So I think it's good to see the validation that what we've said all along regarding the AL Central team, specifically pitchers in the AL Central, makes sense based on win percentage from 2019. Anything else there that matters? We're not really targeting too many Seattle Mariners anyway. But
yeah, I mean, I think the biggest takeaway is most of the teams with the easiest schedules based on last year's records are the teams who had the best schedules or the best records last year because they didn't have to play themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Usually how it goes.
In terms of rosters, we are going to have and we've kind of speculated about this for a while too, but we are going to have a 60-player pool with no minor league season. All teams will carry a pool of 60 players, about half that will be part of a taxi squad that is assigned to an alternate site not located at the team's home park. Teams will need to submit the names of those 60 players by this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Clubs can invite as many as all 60 of those players to their Major League spring training camp, but players not on the 40-man roster also can be assigned to an alternate spring training site. Speaking of the roster size, the active roster, the teams will be allowed to carry 30 players on their big league roster for the first 2 weeks of the season, then get down to 28 on the 15th day of the season, and then down to 26 2 weeks after that. So about a month into the season, we will be back to a 26-man active roster with 34 players on the said taxi squad. The new rule was supposed to limit the number of pitchers on a roster. That has been waived because of the unusual circumstances this season. Scott, you wrote about this as well. How does this affect, you know, what we were thinking in terms of prospects? Why did they have that 2 week kind of decrease every couple of weeks?
Yeah, this was a wah-wah for me because it, for most of the season, rosters won't be expanded at all. 26 was the expectation going into, back in March. So for most of the season, they won't be expanded. It'll only be as many as 30 for 2 weeks, which is also the period, you know, at the start of the season coming off an abbreviated spring training when starters aren't going to be pitching that deep in the games. Those spots are going to have to be used on bullpen depth, basically. Yeah. And I think that'll even be true 2 weeks in when it goes down from 30 to 28. So those spots, you know, maybe a team here or there will be able to sneak a extra prospect on, but like it's only going to be if they're absolutely sure that prospect is ready to contribute. They're not going to take any big swings on a guy just to get him experience or whatever. Rosters won't be expanded enough for long enough for that. So your wildest ideas about prospects making the major league roster, I think you're going to have to curb those. Now there's still incentive to call prospects that they are sure are ready up earlier, because obviously they need to get their best team on the field as soon as possible since they only have 60 games to work with. So I think there's a good chance that the biggest two I've been talking about are Dylan Carlson of the Cardinals and Nate Pearson of the Blue Jays. I still feel pretty good about those. Maybe Spencer Howard of the Phillies, who I probably should have brought up more. Nick Madrigal of the White Sox, because you could argue maybe he's already their best second base option.
Michael Kopech. He's maybe a prospect,
but they have a full rotation without him. So like it would be,
do they though?
Well, I mean,
can't disrespect
people like Gio Gonzalez.
It's a White Sox rotation.
Yeah. You know? There's a chance he's up just to give bullpen depth early on, and maybe they sort out the rotation later, right?
That's what I'm thinking with Kopech. I could imagine him being either a long reliever, pitch multiple innings, maybe a fireman reliever type role for Michael Kopech. And I do appreciate that players already are acknowledging that every game will matter more than it usually does. I saw there were comments from Tucker Barnhart earlier today talking about how they realize how much significance is on every game. And because of that, look, any team has a chance. There is more incentive for the Padres to start the season with a Mackenzie Gore than normally in a season. I understand it'll start as service time clock, but if you actually want to compete, which I guess is different for every owner in baseball, then I think, you know, some teams are going to be more aggressive than others, and they should be, because every game counts.
Yeah.
This time it counts.
And for more teams, more teams have to feel like they have a chance of competing. So, I'm not saying we won't prospects than normal.
Four more teams. What are you talking about? They're not expanding the playoffs this year, are they?
No.
Did I misspeak? They're not expanding the playoffs, no. But I think four more teams, F-O-R. I forget how I was playing off what Frank just said.
Okay. Sorry.
But yeah, more teams are going to feel that urgency just because more teams have a chance. Yeah. So I do think we will see more prospects called up, and it'll happen early, if not from the outset. I mean, if you're going to do it, it makes sense to just do it from the beginning, especially when you have extra roster space to work with. But because of the existence of taxi squads, it doesn't necessarily have to be right away either. That's kind of the point of the taxi squad. You know, there won't be obviously minor league games happening. We won't really have data, I don't suspect, on how players are performing in inter-squad scrimmages or whatever that are happening there with the taxi squad. But I'm sure teams will have ways of evaluating how their top prospects are doing. And if they feel like they need a boost midseason from a guy who's made a big leap down there, then it could absolutely still happen. We could still see midseason call-ups.
The trade deadline, as I mentioned earlier, is August 31st, which means you might only get 1 month of a closer on a bad team. So keep that in mind. Keone Kella, whoever the Giants closer is once that emerges, just keep those things in mind. I will just say, if a team is out of it, I don't know like how realistic it is for a team to be out of it by August 31st. It's literally just a month into the season. I mean, can you see one of those teams just resting their best players because they're not really competing for anything anymore?
No, I don't think so. But it's, you know, the thing is, it's more than a month. It's a month and a week, which is not nothing. Why would they rest their players? I think you know, it's not like they're going to have 130 games in which to evaluate their players, right? They probably want to see as much as they can of these guys. So I don't think so. I hate playing fantasy the last 2 weeks of the season. I ideally end my leagues before that crap. And honestly, I wouldn't mind ending my leagues in a regular season, regular like baseball season before September. You know, basically getting rid of the whole month. I know I'm a little aggressive with that, but this year I feel like the quality is going to be a little bit better. I feel like there are going to be more teams that are within striking distance of the playoffs.
And there's no expanded rosters.
And right. And they're not going 40 man roster.
Right. And like the star players, if they're sitting, they're like, what am I even doing here? What am I risking this for? If I'm not even going to play.
Right. And it's 60 games. It's like, yeah, right. It's not like they're going to be like, all right, well, I played my full season. I'll just sit it out. So I'm more enthusiastic about playing it. And obviously you have to play it to the end. There just aren't enough games, but I think I'm fine with it this year, whereas I really don't like doing it in normal years.
Yeah. You don't have a choice. You got to play all the way to the end of the season this year, Adam. And speaking of which, I basically have mapped out what your schedule should look like in a head-to-head points league. And I think period one, you are going to start on that either Thursday or Friday. I believe it's going to be that Friday, July 24th. So I think your first period, your first scoring week should be that 10-day week through August 2nd. Then periods 2 through 7, which is the regular season, will be August 3rd through September 13th. Those are normal Monday through Sunday weeks from a head-to-head scoring perspective. The end, that'll be the end of the regular season. And, you know, if you play with double headers, that'll give you 14 wins or loss decisions. If you play with triple headers, that will give you 21 wins and loss decisions. Period 8, which will be the semifinals and the playoffs, will be September 14th through the 20th. And then period 9, which will be the championship week, will be September 21st through September 27th. Does that make the most sense?
I love it.
All right.
Here's what I might do. I pretty much feel like, you know, four teams making the playoffs instead of six is just something you have to do in a 12-team league. What if, though, instead of doing a semifinals week and a championship week, if you're in a points league, the four teams get in, they set their lineup, you get a two-week championship, and whoever scores the most points wins.
I don't
like a one-week semifinal and a one-week championship. I think 2 weeks, you know, we always try to have each round of the playoffs be 2 weeks, or at least the championship round. So you can't do that really under this schedule. I think I would like to do that. And I have to make that decision as the commissioner in a couple leagues. Most points scored in those last 2 weeks wins, or maybe you put it up to a league vote, but it's just,
I don't know why you'd lose the head-to-head aspect in the playoffs specifically. Yeah, I don't like 1 week. I mean, it's the norm. First of all, most head-to-head playoff leagues use only 1 week. I don't use it in my leagues. I agree with you, Adam. I like to decrease the luck element during that by making the scoring periods longer, essentially. One thing I thought of, a potential way of doing that, is it's kind of a waste to have that first scoring period be 10 days when we have so few days to work with. If your league was willing to adjust their habits for one very short season and make their scoring period start on Friday, because that's when the season starts, instead of starting on Monday, then you'll have more days to work into a playoff scenario at the end of the season. What you could do with that is make still just two rounds of playoffs, but have them extended over 3.5 weeks, because you got that extra half week, and then just divide those 3.5 weeks into two scoring periods that are extra long. They'd come out to like 10, 11 days, something like that. And obviously the lineup lock would be a different day for the start of each period. But I mean, people are obviously invested because they're playing. They'll be paying attention to when they're supposed to set their lineup. You can remind them as a commissioner, and you can make, I think that's the way to squeeze the most out of this schedule. But of course it means changing people's habits, and you may get some pushback because
you guys are, you're overthinking it. 6 weeks doubleheader schedule, one bye week for each team throughout those 6 weeks. And then you do a 4 week, 12 team tournament with the top four seeds getting a bye, and you play out that. This seems like the simplest and most.
You're right. We were overthinking.
I don't know how you guys didn't come to that conclusion already. You're welcome.
You're working in a bye weeks in a nine and a half week long season.
I think, well, because you want to play everyone in your 12 team league one time. Mm-hmm. And so you need 11 matchups through those 6 weeks. So everybody gets one where they're not facing anyone. I think that's perfectly fair, perfectly reasonable, perfectly straightforward. Let's move on.
Wait a second. I don't think it's one bye week. I think it's 1 week where everyone's doing where you're doing a single header instead of a double header, right?
No, it's 6 weeks. I mean, I guess you could do 5 weeks and then 1 week where you just play one, but that should be different for everyone. And then you have 12 teams in the playoffs. Everybody makes it, but it's seeded. So the top four teams through those 11 games get a bye. So it's eight teams, then eight, then four, then
two. Sorry, I asked.
Boom. I don't see what the confusion is.
All right, my brain hurts. Let's attack Roto. The biggest question I've seen regarding Roto is the innings pitched minimum. What are we going to do this season? Normally, it's either a 900 innings pitched minimum or a 1,000 inning minimum. And if you prorate that to 60 games, you get either 333 based on 900 or you get 370 based on 1,000. What makes sense?
What's the problem here? You just solve the problem.
What makes sense is to set it at 350, but pitchers are not going to go as deep into games as they normally do. So, should we set it to 300? I play in a 15-team league where it's already been set to 300.
So I might round down to the nearest 50, but I don't think I'd go that far down.
So you think 350 is a fair minimum for the season in Roto?
Yeah, I do. I mean, if it means people have to chase innings a little more toward the end of the season, I don't think that's necessarily a problem. It adds an element of strategy, but I wouldn't want to go too far the other way and have somebody just win with a bunch of relievers. By the way, I had this thought last night, based on somebody responding to your poll, Frank, about whether or not we should redraft, and he was talking about how I think he was using Kyle Hendricks as the example, but a pitcher has one bad start in a 60 game season where he's only making 12, let's say, and it could mean he was a waste of a pick in a Roto league because he won't have time to correct his ERA and WHIP from that one bad start. And that got me thinking, are we sure that Roto is really the better format to play in this scenario? Because in a head-to-head league, one bad start, okay, it messes you up that 1 week, but that doesn't mean it was a waste of pick. It doesn't mean Hendricks' numbers or whoever's numbers are ruined for the whole season. Like if he gives you 11 of 12 more or less Kyle Hendricks-like start, even if his ERA and WHIP ends up higher than it used to, because it was limited to that one start, I mean, you don't feel that a poisonous ratio that can happen over a small sample if it's because of just one or two bad starts, you know, it's not going to have the same impact on the standings in a head-to-head league that it would in a Roto league.
I just don't agree with this though, because Kyle Hendricks is a great example. His first two starts, he gave up 6 earned runs and 8 1/3. And then in his fifth start, he gave up 7 earned runs in 5 innings. Through 12 starts, he had a 3.16 ERA. 12 starts is plenty of time, I think, to recover from one horrible
that's fair.
Start.
That's fair. Maybe it's, yeah. Maybe
yeah,
it's
I think it was an overreaction.
A little more than he was given credit for.
Yeah,
but I think so. I still think there's something there. That
I agree with you. There is something there.
Yeah, I mean, if you make 12 starts at 6 innings per start, you're looking at 72 innings. A 3 ERA over 72 innings would be 27 runs allowed, I think. And so if you give up 6 earned runs, you're basically looking at 2.5 runs per start. Then if you give up 6 runs in one, that does throw you off. And, you know, 3 runs over 72 innings would come out to 1/3 of a run, I think.
Well, we didn't overcomplicate this, did we? Let's just play baseball. I mean, this is my biggest takeaway, everybody. just draft and watch baseball and play fantasy. You know, let's not get too
like there is going to be less time for things to regress. There's going to be more outlier performances as a result, but like that's going to be true no matter what format you play in.
Yeah.
Remember why he played fantasy baseball in the first place? Because I'm seeing a lot of takes out there like, this season stinks. Why are we even doing this? Well, you're doing it because you like baseball and you like fantasy baseball, right? Like, if you don't want to put as much money on it because things are going to be wacky, I get that. Don't put as much money on it. But like, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. It's just a game. Like,
I mean, some people play fantasy baseball just because they need to scratch that competitive itch. But look,
yeah, I think it'll still allow you to do that. There is a higher luck element this season than in past seasons.
I mean, look, if you don't want to play fantasy baseball, don't play fantasy baseball. But if you're listening to this podcast on June 24th, 4 months after the season was supposed to start, chances are you want to play baseball. So let's play some fantasy baseball and make the most out of the opportunity. Make some lemonade out of some lemons. Make some,
what's your next
fray pie out of phrase?
I was wondering what your next lemonade analogy was going to be.
Not going to surprise anyone, but I absolutely hate lemonade. Bottom five drink.
I don't even know what to do.
Adam,
with that
you
one.
Hurt my head.
So sour.
Even from Chick-fil-A?
It's too sweet. It's just awful.
Put some like iced tea in it. Make an Arnold Palmer. Oh my goodness.
I don't really like iced tea that much.
Words fail.
All right, Adam, you got to go. Let's at least get to these rapid fire questions from our FBT Facebook group. The first one, and we will throw it to, we'll just rotate everyone here. Scott, you're up first. Do middle relievers get a bump this year? If so, who should you target?
I think they probably would get a small bump, and it's still going to be the guys who are most likely to get saves, so the guys who had dominant ratios last year. I don't think there's any need to overcomplicate that.
A few names that came to mind for me: Tyler Duffy, Emilio Pagan, Seth Lugo. Mm-hmm. All those names sound helpful.
I have a column of 16 of them, so go Google it.
Go Google it. Adam, you're up. Should we avoid players who end up getting hurt during spring training 2.0? If they suffer a setback, they could wind up missing half the season.
I would not say avoid them. It's going to be case by case, but I think it's fair to downgrade a little bit. Yeah.
Chris, do you roster more bench bats in case of COVID outbreak? Also, do you deactivate FAB now that it's unclear how many transactions you may need to make?
I think you definitely have to make changes to how your league handles IL spots and bench spots. I think you should probably just expand your bench spots. I think you should probably add at least one IL spot. As far as FAB, it's such a short season that I could see the argument for just getting rid of FAB, because the marketplace is going to be so different. But I don't know if getting rid of FAB versus just going to waivers, like, it depends on your league. I tend to think just open free agency is a competitive balance issue, and more so in a year like this. So I would still try to have some kind of waiver or FAB. Just allow $0 bids.
Yeah, I don't know why people would disband FAB. Just put in more backup bids. I mean, based on the needs of your team. Scott, this one's coming back your way. It isn't a question, but we spoke about this before the show started, actually. Closers will probably blow more saves with a player at second base in extra inning games. How do you suspect this is going to work, Scott?
Yeah, so I'm curious what percentage of MLB games go into extra innings. 8.7%.
And then how many of those does the road closer team go up in the first inning and force the close and then have the closer? Like you're probably right. Talking about maybe, I don't know, one or two of those events on average per year.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you got to talk about would the reliever have blown the save anyway? Is the closer even the one pitching in that scenario? Is he going to get out of it without allowing a run? Like you're just chopping up these micro fractions to the point that it's probably not worth worrying about, especially since so few formats even factor in losses for a pitcher.
Scott, you told me that the player who starts on second base is going to basically act as an error, right?
That's how Ken Rosenthal put it. It's like the runner reached as an error, so okay. It won't count against the pitcher's ERA was what was the point he was making. Nobody's credited with an error. The team isn't credited with an error. An error didn't actually happen, of course, but that's how the base runner is treated. So if we're projecting that out, then presumably if the pitcher who allows that runner in, if it ends up deciding the game, would take the decision, would take the loss. But that I haven't explicitly heard that. That just logically follows.
Adam, you're next up. What is a good replacement category for quality starts this year?
I don't know why we're so convinced that like pitchers are going to go so much shorter in a game, especially the ones that are fantasy relevant. I think the crappy pitchers that we don't roster anyway are going to definitely have their innings cut. But I use quality starts. It's still a skill, and it forces you to draft better pitchers. So I guess you could use innings.
That's what I was thinking.
But I think just stick with quality starts. Look, I do think pitchers will go. Won't go quite as deep into games, but already pitchers don't go that deep into games. So I think in terms of the ones that we roster in most fantasy leagues, it's not going to be as different as maybe people are making it out to be. You stick with quality starts, in my opinion.
All right, Chris.
There were 74 save opportunities in extra innings last season across baseball.
So
it's hard to know if that's a lot.
But that's over the course of a 162-game season.
Yeah, two per team. So on average, you'd probably expect maybe one per team. Over the course of a 60-game season, probably a little bit less. So it's not something you should think about.
All right, Chris, are you ready? You're going to take us home, country road. I actually hate that
great
song.
Great song. Love that song.
Hate that song. That's my Adam Azer take for the day. How come I am not hearing more hype for long relievers? For leagues that place value on wins, which are most points in roto, and most SPs, at least in the first month, will barely go 4 to 5 innings, wouldn't players like Brad Peacock, Freddie Peralta, and Ross Stripling have more value as long relievers?
No, probably not. Like maybe, but that's so random. Like we do occasionally every year, like we'll see one or two relievers win like 8 to 10 games. I think Will Harris had a really high win total recently, but for the most part, these are incredibly rare events and there's no guarantee that your Brad Peacock is going to come into the game with a lead or, you know, in a tie situation. And so I just think you're kind of chasing impossible odds there. If you're looking for wins, that does not mean, however, that, you know, a Freddie Peralta pitching 5 innings a week as a middle reliever wouldn't have plenty of value on his own if he's good.
For Scott, Chris, and Adam, thank you all for listening and watching on the Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.